Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back. You're on Greenwashed Breakfast Takeover. Hope you've enjoyed things so far. Hope you enjoyed Mark Cameron. And now we're going to go to a second part of what we do every week, effectively, is the Climate Crazies segment. But what I wanted to finish on, though, to sum up about Mark Cameron was, basically, he is saying that there is a lot of work to do in New Zealand to get New Zealand back on track. Too many overbearing regulations. Now, this morning, I just happened upon a Substack by Elizabeth Nixon, N-I-C-K-S-O-N, under the Too Absurdistan moniker. And I just want to read you one paragraph out of that that sums up pretty much what Mark Cameron was talking about. And she's talking about it in an American sense, so bear with me. It says, the administrative state was powering all this extractive. It says it was all extractive. It feared creative destruction, feared growth, and turned the whole culture inward, fighting for the power to restrict humanity and inevitably turning us towards instability. The knowledge class, fighting to imprison us, complains about the instability they themselves created for their own personal gain. In the job market, for knowledge workers, rather than create something, people compete for jobs to police, to suppress and censor. This is the definition of a vicious circle and will bring down the whole human enterprise. Now, Jaspreet, I'd put it to you that that pretty much sums up what, you know, I've been talking about for months. In fact, all my political life, actually, the overbearing and overreach of the state and the actors that they employ. And yes. I think Mark Cameron was hot about this. I hope there's a lot more fervour from the ACT Party to get this sorted. We haven't got long. We need to get it sorted.
Yep, we need to get onto this ASAP. And as this paragraph you read out from the Absurdistan blog, Substack, I agree with, you know, employing people to police us. Just look at the Ministry for Environment example that we had discussed, going from 320 employees to 1,200 employees. What are those three quarters new, you know? What are that massive, you know, hundreds of employees? What are they doing? What are they creating? What are they adding to the productivity?
And I know that people will say, oh, you guys are just anti the environment. You don't want things protected. No, I want to know that what is being talked about and we're spending money on is actually advancing the environment in a positive way. It doesn't appear to me, and I've said it before, in our area, I ask the regional council, you've spent about $1 billion over your time in existence, supposedly enhancing the environment in Southland. And, you know, I can't put a dollar value on anything other than a few tests they may have done. And a few rules I've imposed, but there's been a huge amount of self-interest around their spend. So the wage bill of Environment Southland, for instance, I'm not just picking on Environment Southland, really, all councils, what's the value proposition? And I say that about the bureaucracy that's around the meat, wool, dairy sector anywhere. You add all these bureaucrats in the regime, how much are they adding the value of the products? And farmers are now got their backs against the wall again. Every time we make a buck, the reef fish are there to nibble at it, and they just gnaw away at the carcass until there's only the bones left. And that's where we are. Sad, isn't it?
It is, but listeners, we did promise you a rural focus, a primary industries focus show this morning. I hope you're living up to that. Now, going on to the climate crazy news of the previous few days, last few days, this one caught my attention. COP29, that is the Conference of Parties, or for the uninitiated, the United Nations Environmental Arm. So they have an annual meeting this year. It's the 29th one, and it's being hosted in Azerbaijan, its capital at Baku. And they are seeking, the host country is seeking $1 billion from fossil fuel producing countries and companies to kickstart a climate fund to help the developing world. Brilliant. $1 billion. So every single argument of theirs is that fossil fuels are bad for you. There is no checks and balances as to how far fossil fuels have actually saved humanity, kept us warm when we needed to, kept us cooled when we needed to, fed us, the fertilizers that come from us, the 6,000 odd products, byproducts of fossil fuel extraction, nothing, just $1 billion, cuff up.
Well, it fixes everything. And of course, this Bronwyn Tucker, she's got a handout large as life. The public finance lead at the campaign group Oil Change International said this is a dangerous distraction from the strong new climate finance goal and national plans that COP29 must ensure for a fair, full and fast fossil fuel phase out. Boy, there's a lot of F words in there. I was amazed I got that out. But how these people, they say it with their mouth so damn well full. And it's like it's sixpence to them. It just drives me nuts. And I don't know why we get so much of this rammed down our throat each day. I suppose it's the media is doing its job. It's presenting the story. But man, I just want the disadvantaged countries in the world to actually have leadership that can accept that there has to be property rights before there's actually a thriving country. There has to be private property rights respected, and they need to have low-cost energy options, as we all do, to have a thriving world, instead of this whole idea that we seem to have put in front of us now is we've got to have this net zero nirvana that comes at great cost. It just annoys me so much. And we every week, Jaspreet, we go on about this, but hopefully we're turning the dial.
The climate crisis is a gift that keeps on giving. So when with fossil fuels on the way out, Toyota agrees. Toyota has turned its back, says the Sky News headline, on the country Aussies by killing its much-loved V8 turbo diesel in a bid to appease the green lobby. This headline came last week. And of course, it's a case of how high do I jump? And, you know, somebody jumps. And most of it comes from the bigger companies who can afford to do so. But killing a very popular product for the Outback Australia, let's see how far this goes.
Well, it's interesting. I think there's a whole lot of United Nations vehicles where a Toyota Land Cruiser V8, so maybe it's not such a big deal, Jaspreet. I'd say they'll have something up their sleeve.
Funny you should say that. Now, Dad and my brother, both of them served with the United Nations 2 decades apart, both of them in Africa. And Africa runs on the Land Rover. That's the only reliable vehicle they had there. So let's see how this goes.
Look, I'm pretty sure Toyota is one of the smartest companies in the world for automobiles. They will have a plan, and I don't think the serious V8 loving driver will be let down. There will be something good come out of this.
Let's see. Hopeful dawn. What's next? Well, over the last week, sometime again, shoreline adaptation plans and talks of those and consultations began. I saw this post by the Waitakere Rangers local board, and which is, of course, under the Auckland Council. And they are telling, they told people that come along to this meeting on the 18th of July at the Titirangi War Memorial Hall. Come and have your say on what is effectively a precursor to managed retreat. And Dawn and I, and even Paul on the breakfast show here that we've taken over today, we've spoken to various groups, various experts, scientists, and even Kapiti Kam, who've been pushing back against this sort of nonsense based on outlandish United Nations models of how the sea is going to come in and drown all of us, seems to be falling on deaf ears, Dawn, so far. It's like council after council jumping on to the same thing based on the same RCP 8.5. That's a model which has outlandish assumptions, one of which is that the coal use is going to increase by 10 times. And somehow, from currently a CO2, I think it's 417 parts per million, we are going to jump to 2,000 parts per million over the next century. If that's not outlandish, I don't know what is. But here we have this continuing, this
well, it's
stupidity.
The gift that's going to keep giving this gift until I hope the Minister for the Environment can say, stop, we've just got to stop this nonsense. It cannot go on. But no one seems to be wanting to say this. I mean, the IPCC says these scenarios are implausible, but again, we've got the McKinsey and Company, and I have to say it's in a Breakthrough Institute article by Jessica Winkle, talked about overstating the financial risks of climate change. It came out on July the 1st. And clearly, McKinsey are hamming this up. McKinsey makes sure that this scenario, this high-end scenario, is not going to go away soon. They know it's the gift that keeps giving, and they're trying to put the fear of the future into everybody, saying it's going to alter the mortgage market, and it's going to alter this, and it's going to alter. Well, it is. It is. In our country, the bankability of sections and houses along those coastlines and further in, and the insurability of them, is put under threat by this nonsense.
So effectively, private property rights, so long, see you later.
Well, and so I just get to my point a little bit more. It says here the climate change consulting business is now valued at $2.2 billion and is forecast to reach well over $7 billion by 2033. Oh, you wouldn't think McKinsey's would be involved in that, would you? They wouldn't be deep
nothing
into that.
To do with money. That's small change here.
So the vendors often employ high emission scenarios such as RCP 8.5. These worst case scenarios underscore the potential financial implications of failing to address climate change effectively and help clients grasp the magnitude of potential losses and adopt appropriate risk mitigation strategies. Oh, whoop-dee-doo. These outfits, they cannot get off their drug. They are peddlers. They are peddlers of a drug.
I think, Don, we need to also take into account our own personal responsibility as individuals to see what these models are being proposed by our governors, be it your center government, local government. GIGO, garbage in, garbage out, is how these models should actually be called out. If you are willing to believe that suddenly an amount of CO2 in the air is going to be 5 times and coal use is going to be 10 times, and those are reasonable assumptions, and you go along with this, well, then you deserve everything that's coming your way and more. It's time to educate yourself somewhat here. And the sooner we do this, the better.
I want to feed my family before I feed these consultants. And again, I was thinking about this, Jasper, just in the last few minutes. Who looks back and holds their consultancies to account for their for the presentation of their documents over the decades? I don't think many people look back and say, oh, that didn't work out too flash. And I don't see many people.
Any clawback? Yeah.
No. That's the issue. They're not accountable. And they then get, then worse, they get asked to write another report. If you fail first time round, isn't it a big fail? You wouldn't get another job. But these big consultancy firms just keep the printing machine going, as well as their money printing machine.
It is, yeah. I mean, you look at Neil Ferguson in the UK. He went from mad cow modeling, early days, BSc, led to the cull of millions of ruminants in the UK. He went on then to COVID modeling. Amazing how much, how lucrative the modeling profession is. As in making models, make-believe scenarios. I have missed my calling, Don, so have you.
Well, I think so. And if you look to draw the New Zealand parallel, several of those names that we might not just mention right now. People just need to track them and see where they've gone to next. And climate modeling is part of their gig.
Absolutely. So listeners, this explained what Don is saying. Look at those who modeled COVID scenarios in New Zealand over the last 3 years. You'd be very surprised to see, depending on which way you lean, that they have found more lucrative income streams. I'll just leave it at that. The next one in the climate crazy, which is this headline, which says, it affects everything, it being climate change. Why is Hollywood so scared to tackle the climate crisis? Headline on The Guardian, which says, Twisters is, you know, a summer flick that's been released. And it's the latest in the long line of movies which fails to address the environmental emergency, and it's a missed opportunity. You know, never let an opportunity go waste. Every movie, every influencer, every single one, your mantra has to be environmentalism.
Well, I thought that headline was a bit of a spoof, actually, because Hollywood seems to embrace all this all the time, and everything, you know, especially the actors themselves, they all of a sudden become so virtuous about things that effectively you know, they wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for the use of the environment. They wouldn't have anyone buying the right to their movies. They just wouldn't have any worthiness whatsoever. So they speak with their mouthful again, these people. But I think it's a joke because Hollywood's full of people that actually do present a whole lot of that environmentalism and climate angst.
And other crazy headlines.
No. I got it wrong.
No, you haven't done. Another crazy headline, and this weekend, you know, we had a lot to pick from. I'm sort of spoiled for choice here once again. Was 6 million people at risk from extreme heat in England, warns campaign group. Oh. And you read through the fine print, and it says extreme heat is defined as 5 days of more of 27 degrees. Oh goodness, how did people ever survive 27 degrees for 5 days? There are those, including friends in the UK, who tell me it has been a, you know, a washout of a summer, but here they are warning us of a heat wave. In the same way, in the Guardian also spoke about the fact that UK now is the first country in the EU to approve lab-grown meat, starting with pet food. So the Animal and Plant Health Agency and Department for Environmental, Food and Rural Affairs UK have approved the product from the country meatly. Well, it's no surprise that UK has to do it, seeing the rate at which it has been going at destroying farming, making it financially unviable. Little wonder that your pooch is now going to be eating something made in a lab. Oh, the mind boggles.
Well, look, I don't know what to say to this, Jaspreet. There's so many of these businesses around the world clutching at this sort of new way of doing stuff, even locally. I think in Australia, there may be some companies trying to do the same thing. Things will ebb and flow, and there'll be money gained and lost. I don't know. Will the pets of the world be so worried about it? Most pets just want fed, I think. But you're right. What's wrong with having the system that we've had up till now?
The real meat.
But
that's where the retailers have also been going. And Tesco's has said in the UK that it's going to trial a methane-reducing feed supplement for dairy cows as a part of its initiative to cut carbon footprint. Mm. And it's going to be trialing this feed supplement in a few of its partner farms there. So, and methane is something we've been hearing a lot about here in recent times. But when they keep telling us it's a customer demanding this, it is not the customer. It is these big businesses that hold, global businesses with the balance sheets that at times even dwarf those of governments, holding farmers to ransom.
Mm. And moreover, bringing it back to New Zealand, how much have we spent perhaps on this idea that we're going to try and reduce the methane emissions from animals, perhaps about between 700 and 900 million so far.
We've certainly committed upwards of $500 million.
And the new science is that there is no effect of warming effect from methane from any source, regardless of its source, effectively. So either a cow or a pipeline to make any measurable difference to world temperature. So we're doing it all for nothing, but the grifters are just constantly wanting to hang on to the last vestige of their con job, effectively, because it's been a massive con job.
It has, and our next guest is someone who will expose some of the grifters for what they are. Dawn, would you introduce her?
Yeah, it's Jane Smith, a North Otago farmer. She's a great advocate for farming. She's done a lot of good public speaking on this stuff. She doesn't mince her words. So she's up after the break.
Yep. Thank you so much for joining Dawn and me on Breakfast, Greenwash Breakfast this morning. 2057 is a number, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.